Right now it is time for The Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David, of course, has his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief and joins us live on a Friday morning. Good morning, David.
Well, hello from the media capital of the world, New York City. And as you were saying before you joined me, this is a resident day again here in what was a target city in a previous crisis, still trying to recover from its current crisis. Good to be with you on September 11th.
You know, you think about that, go back to that day very quickly, 19 years ago, and look at the world today and look at the world before that event happened. And really, when you look at history 100 or 200 years from now, this one event and the reactions to it really have changed the course of lives for millions and millions of people.
Yes, indeed. America was stunned by it, I think. Other countries were less surprised. America, in some, I actually heard it said at the time, 19 years ago, that in some sense America was losing its innocence. Terrorist attacks, of course, were just a fact of life for many people in many other countries. America had not had this kind of attack on its own soil ever before. And when it had, it, of course, it had been self-inflicted in a sense. I mean, it came from within. I'm thinking of the Oklahoma bombing, for instance. White nationalism played its part in that. But yes, the 9/11 attacks were a shock to the system, and America's reaction to it became, of course, a shock to a very great slice of the rest of the world. Two wars sparked by it, justifiably or not, and in a sense, those wars are still going on. Iraq, not formally, but in Afghanistan, certainly still quite literally a war still going on these 19 years later.
Well, it's a day that that we all remember, and even people that were not around on that day should take this day to, if they don't know more about it, to investigate it and look back on it, because it's one of those events in history that really was not only altering for the country that it happened in, but to basically the whole world. I mean, it's there's very few events that come around that are that change the course of history as much. We'll just put it that way. Now, Jill has pointed out something to me and wanted me to bring it up to you, and I'm just amazed at this story. And that is John Sebastian Jacques is leaving by mutual agreement. What we're talking about here, a mining company blew up a 46,000-year-old rock shelter in West Australia. And the Church of England's pension board was among the groups that put pressure on the board of the Rio Tinto to take action. How can somebody business blow up something that's 46,000 years old?
It boggles the mind. It certainly does. But yes, mining companies and extractive industries, they're called. And it couldn't be a finer, I mean, a sharper description of the sort of company that goes around blowing things up. Of course, I mean, you're there to extract the value, the mineral value, or whatever other kind of substance you're digging for or exploding in hopes to find, and you're there to take stuff away. The extractive industries are responsible for an awful lot of abuses of land and land which is important to the people who live on it, and of course in many parts of the world, including North America and Australasia, land and the people are and the indigenous people are intertwined in a very important, deep, often spiritual way. And in this case, it's yet another example of the high-handedness of multinational capital. And it's interesting that it should be a church organization, the Anglicans, who are playing a part in bringing the outrage to public attention and seeking sanctions against the perpetrator.
Well, you know, you look back here in this country and you just think about the oil pipelines that were scheduled to go through Indian burial grounds, and thank goodness a federal judge finally stepped in. But there is no easy way to mix these industries with a history of an indigenous people. It appears to fall on deaf ears, and you have massive mistakes and things like this happen that there is no correction from.
It's hard to see how a community could recover from this yeah. explosive event. I mean, it's explosive and destructive, quite literally in every sense.
Well, now we have to get to the 1,800-pound gorilla in the room. And that is the book that was released this week.
Yes, indeed. The book is called... first of all, we should say that it's a sequel to a previous book by the same author, Bob Woodward, one of the great Woodstein pair, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, who together as Woodstein, their nickname given by their editor at the Washington Post, did their investigations into President Richard Nixon, which helped very substantially to bring him down and get him out of office. The previous book by Bob Woodward was all about Trump, another president under scrutiny in a way that he deserves to be under scrutiny. And that book was called Fear. This new book is called Rage. Hardly surprising. And of course, there's been something of a rageful response to the revelations that come in that book.
The amazing thing is, first of all, and Woodward has done books on Democratic presidents, Republican presidents. None of them have all been pleased by the results of what he's come out with.
Very few have been pleased with what Bob Woodward comes out with. Yeah. But, usually because he learns things that presidents are trying to keep secret. In this ironic case, he is revealing things that were told to him directly by the president concerned. And, of course, the president is furious, and he's denying that he ever said them. And yet there are, at least he's denying the import of them. In this case, there are audio recordings of the president saying these very words. So here we have again a president flying in the face of what is absolutely provable fact.
Well, that's the whole thing about this book. What makes this book different than all these other books that have come out recently is the words themselves come from the person who said them, not from a third person or fourth person, but directly from the President of the United States. And the thing that really amazes me, and we haven't heard much from the Republican senators or the Republican Congress members, was how flippantly the President tossed off about this new nuclear power, this nuclear weapon that we've developed, now, who knows? The Russians and the Chinese probably knew a little bit about it, but now what they think they know is actually true. And you haven't heard one peep out of anybody on the Republican Party saying how unbelievably bad that was.
Yeah, for whatever Trump may say about the issue of national security, he obviously has no conception of how to regard matters of national security, and bragging in some sort of nod, wink, wink kind of way to a journalist, in the full knowledge that, that this will be published. There was nothing sort of embargoed in this conversation. There was nothing, nothing in the way of I won't reveal this. Certain areas we're talking now on deep background and not for publication. Everything in those conversations was for publication, and yet Trump goes right ahead and blabbers his mouth. It's just another important example. I think even though it's a small bunch of words and who knows what it actually means, but it's clearly of great resonance when it comes to the matter of what is a justifiable national secret and what isn't. If there's a new weapon system that's been developed and it's being kept secret for a reason, it may well be right that it should come out into the open, but not in this way by a president bragging away in private, or in a private setting at least, to a journalist who's writing a book. I mean, this is not how matters of national security are dealt with for the benefit of the public.
As we sit here less than 60 days away to the election, and I want you to think back at the conclusion of the 2016 election, did you ever think things could be worse in a political in once again a national election? Do you think that there's some way that America could actually have topped the dumbfoundedness that we did 4 years ago? Because it looks like we're going to surpass it.
Dumbfoundedness. I'm not sure. I was among those few journalists and commentators who was not surprised by the result. I had been listening to primarily black sources, and not a single black American, to my acquaintance, was the slightest bit surprised by Trump's victory. It was boiled down to me very simply in a kind of not exactly flip, but certainly very rule of thumb kind of application of a notion. I was told by, again, an African American source. He said, quite simply, he says this election is all about how many angry white men there are, and are they going to vote? And I fear that same calculation must be brought to bear in considerable incisiveness this time around. What is the calculus? It may not be the only calculus at work in this election, but I fear with the summer that we've had and the assumption by the Trump campaign of this insidious law and order issue, if ever there was a misnomer, this is it. We may well be seeing that fundamental racist or xenophobic issue at the heart of our election once again.
It obviously is going to be a big portion of it, but the total mishandling now, and in the president's own words, it can't be denied any further that the president of the United States went against advisors in January, went against advisors and Chi in late January, and just totally trying to play this as not wanting to scare the country, where, of course, we can look at the great racial divide where he's very good at scaring the country and winding it up. There is just no excuse that exonerates the president from one of the biggest missteps in American security and health ever in the history of this country.
Sure. To know that the COVID the COVID virus was a serious threat, a very serious threat, as he acknowledged very clearly in his conversation with Bob Woodward, and yet say the complete opposite in public and deny that there was any risk at all, which is essentially what he was saying. You know, saying it would disappear like magic was one of his prize quotes at the time, and his rationale for that, given in these last few days, is that he didn't want to panic people. I mean, it's specious, and you know, in other circumstances would be laughable, but it is yet again a clear and crystalline example of irresponsibility at its height or its depth.
You know, if you look at that reasoning, what if FDR decided not to let the American public know about, and it would have been possible back then, about what happened in Hawaii, about the attack of the Japanese? What would be if the Bush administration had tried to whitewash and hide things? I mean, with conspiracy theorists, with what happened on 9/11. I mean, it's the president's job is not to hide things to make the country feel better. It's to face things that happen and let the country know that their government is dealing with it and is trying everything it can. There is absolutely no excuse, and I'm just surprised at the silence that is coming out of the Congress and the House on this. I'm just
It's acutely embarrassing at the very least. I mean, if you're a Republican senator at the moment, how do you respond to this? You're terrified of this crazy individual in charge of your own party, and of course with enormous power to get vindictive against you. I mean, enough Republican office holders have felt the scourge of Trump's whip when they cross him, and so yes, they're scared, and they're not. They don't obviously feel themselves not in a position to concur with the rest of us in our outrage about this man's mishandling of our national affairs. What it goes to, I think, not just the malignant narcissism of the man, in that it's all about him and it's all about having, in January through to March, been frightened of not looking like he was not looking good. I think that's the phrase that's used about him when people in the White House consider issues that reflect on the president. Is this making the president look good or look bad? That seems to be the judgment these days. But it's not just about whether he looks good or not. It's also a matter of how he perceives the role of leading the nation. It goes to the heart, not just of his psychological state, about which we could say lots of things, but about the concept of the office. The very fact that he's there because essentially NBC promoted him as a proponent of and as the star of a so-called reality show in which we know everything is not a reality at all but a created scripted affair, that he believes ruling the country is somehow like a reality show, and it's all a matter of the appearance of things, not the hard truth of substance. So when it comes to a major calamity facing us in the public health arena, which will then have enormous impact on the economic arena too, his first thought is, how does this look? And how do I behave to make it look a certain way? Well, you know, as often, the way he makes things look the way that he wants to make them look is that he lies about them. And that's what he did in January through March so clearly, and continues to do afterwards, of course. But it all goes to the heart of having a reality show president.
And I don't want to let our good friends over on the other side of the ocean off the hook either. We've talked about this off and on for the past year or so, but Boris Johnson is really playing with fire now with his neighbors to the north. I mean, this is a situation that could get out of hand very quickly.
His neighbors to the north and in Scotland, you're talking about, of course, and also his neighbors to his west Ireland, and especially Northern Ireland, the part of Ireland which is still legally and governmentally under Westminster's jurisdiction. But it's a complicated situation, and he's making it extremely dangerous as well as complicated yet again. The idea of the border across Ireland is becoming, because, you know, Southern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, is a member of Europe still, while the United Kingdom, including Northern Ireland, is not. That new anomaly means that the border is becoming an issue again. And as we remember from 20 years, 30 years of bombing and shootings and terrorist attacks, we know that that is a vital issue, that to have it inflamed again is not unlike his very similar opposite number in the White House. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is behaving with enormous irresponsibility as a leader, and of course, yes, in Scotland too, he's running the danger of, well, he's already managed to stoke the danger up of Scottish nationalism and separatism by fanning the flames and over this issue yet again, because Scotland doesn't want to be out of Europe either, and that's translating into a strengthening of Scottish nationalism. The Scottish National Party now runs the national government of Scotland, the if you like, the sort of province or state separation from Westminster that they do have to some limited extent, is now being, the feelings about it are being fanned up so much now that they'll want to break in a complete break for complete independence. And that issue lies at the feet entirely of Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
And you can look at the troubles that we face here, but when you add, and for people that are not young, that are not old enough to realize what happened with Northern Ireland, just focus in on the years of violence with Northern Ireland, and then add on top of that the instability with Scotland, and there's massive problems that lie ahead economically and also possibly terrorism-wise that would be resulting out of this that would face England.
Well, yes, the man who helped negotiate the peace for Northern Ireland, George Mitchell, was telling me, Senator, or the head of the Senate, in fact, and during the Clinton administration, George Mitchell was brought in to chair the peace talks for Northern Ireland. And remember now, we've had peace as a result of that agreement for 20 years or so, and he was telling me how much it is in danger now because of this very loose and fast and loose behavior by the British government under Boris Johnson. The fact that this border could become yet again a target for extremists, and the whole idea of the Irish peace process being blown up by an irresponsible government in Westminster is every Irish person's nightmare.
It's just the times we live in now. Do we have any accolades for the media this week?
We do, you know. It's the kind of Newsweek that would want you to give an accolade like ours, the find and good and praise it slot that we fanfare each week. It would have gone to Bob Woodward, but I think everyone's been concentrating so much on that. I would just want to put in a word for a news agency. Yeah, well, you know, the unsung heroes of the news media world. We gave this fanfare to there it is. That fanfare went to the Associated Press recently, but I want to give it to this week to the Reuters news agency. They did a wonderful detailed job revealing in the detail, and of course it is always in the detail that journalism is at its best, when those details are thoroughly researched and double-checked. In this case, they have revealed through the workings of Microsoft's reporting, the workings of Microsoft's researchers into how the Russians, particularly their military intelligence arm, which has got the ridiculous Russian name of Fancy Bear, have been subverting the upcoming American election by attacking the campaign consultants for the Democratic Party. And other people have followed up on that Reuters story now, including the New York Times, and shown how both parties are now being attacked by people like the research agency that the Russians have been organizing so effectively. And so have the Chinese, and so have the Iranians. We know that, and that's been revealed too. But there's no doubt that the Russians are at the spearhead of this all this effort, and do seem to have the most sophisticated and the most effectively intrusive mechanisms for getting the mischief played out.
Well, David, another unbelievable week. We'll check with you next week.
Absolutely.
David Tarachuk with the Media Beat here on Robinhood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web.